Already on the phone right now is author Saul Austerlitz. His new book, Generation Friends, an inside look at the show that defined a television era, comes out on September 17th from the fine folks at Dutton. Just in time, because this year is the 25th anniversary of the show. Saul's on the phone now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Now, I got to tell you, man, reading up about you, I read the book. I loved it. There's so much great behind-the-scenes stuff that I didn't even know about. But all morning long, I had to go and watch the theme song, I'll Be There For You. And now I can't get it out of my damn head.
I apologize. I'm sorry.
Did you have to research that? In the book, you talk a lot about, not a lot, but you devote a good chapter or so to the talking about the behind the scenes of the song. Were you sick of the song by the time you finished writing the part about the song?
I definitely will say that I made use of the skip function on Netflix to make sure that I didn't have to keep listening to the theme song over and over 236 plus times.
So you went back and watched all the shows, I take it, before you wrote the book?
Definitely.
Yeah, I was just actually on YouTube and I put in Friends theme. And there's a really cool version from when it debuted on Netflix with two guys in a simulated coffee house with Gunther. Have you seen that version?
No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It was for when Friends debuted on Netflix a while back, even though now they're going back to it. They've been taken off next year and going to the WB streaming service. Mm-hmm. So how long did it take you to write this book?
It took me about a year from start to finish.
And what was your research like? I noticed you said that you talked to people behind the scenes. Did you try to talk to any of the six principal actors, or was that not part of the plan?
I reached out to them, and through their agents and managers, it became pretty clear that they weren't interested in participating. But that's pretty much what I had expected from the outset. I'd really been hoping to talk to the creators of the show and the writers and staff, and that. That ended up working out, and I got a lot of really good material from them.
Yeah, you did, actually. I mean, the book, like I said, I knew some of the stuff, but not all of it. And I also have to say congratulations. You got a two-page spread in the latest Entertainment Weekly that's out on stores now with the Queen on the cover of it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
It gives some great information, which, I read before I read the book. I guess we'll just start from the beginning. The show came about. They pitched it to NBC. It had a different name at first, and then they ended up changing it. But the whole process of getting it on the air, getting everyone cast, that's a fascinating thing in itself for anyone that ever wonders how a show even gets on TV.
Yeah, it was really interesting for me to understand a bit about how the sausage gets made and to learn about the specifics of casting and shooting a pilot and kind of understanding all the exact steps of the process that goes from sitting at your desk and having an idea for a show to actually having a show that's on the air.
The only one that was really thought of to be on the show was Courtney Cox. Everybody else kind of auditioned and they had other people in mind. It's very fascinating when you read the list of people that might have been on the show or certain characters, and after watching the series, and it's been a lot of years since it's been on, thinking, wow, Janine Garofalo is Monica? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think it would have been an entirely different show. But it's interesting as well to understand how David Crane and Marta Kauffman initially conceived of the characters. And clearly, when they were first thinking about the show, Monica was going to be the star of the show. She's going to be the main character with everyone else in a kind of supporting role. And I think she was going to be a fairly different sort of character. Still a chef, still living in New York, but a little bit more of like a gruff, tough-talking, but lovable New Yorker. And I think we can kind of get the picture of it by imagining Janine Garofalo in the role, since she was who they had in mind as well.
Or Rosie O'Donnell.
Right. And so, following them through the process, we kind of get a sense of how the storyline changes and how their sense of what they're going to do with the show changes. So initially, the thinking is that, Monica's going to be the main character and her love interest is going to be the Joey character, who's still going to live across the hall and still be an actor, but be a little bit more of like a dashing, leading man, serious actor type. They envision him as like a young Al Pacino. And then over the course of casting the show, you know, one of the things that they pointed out and that other people pointed out to me as well is that you don't really necessarily know exactly what you have until you get all of the main, all the actors who are playing the main roles together in a room. And once you do that, you have a better sense of, did we cast the show correctly? Do the people have chemistry with each other? And so I think one of the things that they pretty quickly discovered was that David Schwimmer and Jennifer Aniston had a particular kind of chemistry when they were acting together. And they realized that it would make more sense to have that be kind of the main romantic axis of the show.
Yeah, and Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry were under contract to other pilot TV shows that they didn't know if they were going to get picked up or not. And NBC did something really cool. You'll have to read the book to hear the whole story. But they basically canceled Jennifer Aniston's pilot, and they ended up getting her. It's a really cute story about the way they do things in TV. I'll have to read the story in the book. I don't want to give everything away. But Jennifer ended up coming to Friends.
Yes, but it's pretty astonishing in hindsight. You know, I kept asking people, well, what was plan B?
Yeah.
You know, what would happen if it didn't work out? And they didn't seem to have one. There was, you know, for all of NBC's being this, you know, one of the big three networks, and this being a kind of crucial time on their schedule, and this being a crucial role in the show, there wasn't really a backup plan. You know, if it somehow didn't work out, or if CBS didn't fold, or whatever the case may have been, it's not clear to me what exactly they would have done.
David Schwimmer didn't even want to do the show. He kind of had to be convinced to do it after reading the character because he had soured on TV. But he ended up doing it, and, you know, Ross and Rachel went down in history.
Yeah, he'd had some pretty negative experiences. He'd been on a show earlier in the year called Monty with Henry Winkler, and it hadn't gone well. And I think he had been under the impression or had had the experience that made him feel that, you know, TV was a place where you didn't really get to do what you wanted. You know, he was someone who studied theater in college and started his own theater company afterwards. And so theater sort of felt more like real acting to him. And television was this frustrating place where you could maybe earn some money, but where you didn't get to really perform. So even though Marta Kaufman and David Crane, when they were writing the show, were telling themselves, oh, for Ross, we know who we want. We want David Schwimmer. He was someone who had come out for one of their other shows and had been a finalist for a role and ended up not getting it, but he was someone who they really liked. His initial response was, no, thank you. I don't want to do TV anymore. TV is dispiriting and makes me unhappy. And so it required other people reaching out to him and saying, hey, you know, David, give it another shot. At least take a look at the script. And P.S., they genuinely wrote this role specifically for you. That convinced him to at least look it over. And once he did, he changed his mind.
The book is Generation Friends, out on September 17th. There's so much in the book, and I don't have a lot of time to go over everything, but some of the highlights, the contract negotiations. I did not know this because social media wasn't really that big after season 6, but it came down to literally about an hour before their contract negotiation time clock was up, that the show was practically canceled. It wasn't on NBC's fall schedule. Lisa Kudrow was holding out and getting the rest of the cast to hold out because everyone should have been paid the same amount of money. And the one thing I noticed throughout the whole show was all 6 cast members always stuck together, always had each other's back. You never heard anything bad about any of them saying anything bad about each other. And for a 10-year TV series, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I think what you're describing is also a product of decisions that were made earlier on. So, you know, relatively early, let's say in the first season, the clear breakout stars of the show were David Schwimmer and Jennifer Aniston. And so in a more traditional environment, the network would reach out to them, would say, hey, we love you guys. We want you to be on the show for a really long time. Let's renegotiate your contract. And they would go off individually and renegotiate their contracts and get a big pay raise. David Schwimmer, you know, his mother was a lawyer, and he was someone who was kind of familiar with the world of contracts and negotiations. And he decided that he didn't feel like that made sense. You know, they were six performers with relatively equal roles on the show. They put in equal work. They were there the same number of hours. Why should it be that he should get paid more and they should get paid less? And how would he feel about it, knowing that he was getting, you know, 50 or 100 or 200% more than his co-stars? So instead, he went to them and said, you know, NBC is coming to me offering me a contract extension. Let's all negotiate together. And so in the short run, he and Jennifer Aniston likely gave away some of what they could have gotten in a contract negotiation, since it, whatever they got had to be for all six of them. But in the long run, it was a very savvy move, I think, because it created an environment where NBC and Warner Brothers knew that if they wanted the show to continue, they would have to work with all six performers together. And, you know, whatever they offered would have to be the same and would have to be transparent.
Yeah, and you talk, again, you talk about everything behind the show from the beginning to the end. Ross and Rachel, you talk about their history. You talk about the fact that Monica, again, was supposed to be with Joey at the beginning. You talk about how Chandler and Monica, how they just, when they got together, it blew everyone's mind and they ended up staying together. You talk about the Marcel, the monkey, and how he really wasn't liked. Jennifer's hair, oversaturation of the show. And the other thing that I'm glad you addressed, because it always annoys me when I watch reruns of the first few seasons, is that damn beam in Monica's apartment. How it wasn't there, and then it was there, and then it wasn't there.
Yeah, it turned out that that was a real favorite of James Burrows, who's, you know, sort of the legendary director of Cheers and other shows, who did most of the first season of Friends. And he really liked it, and he thought it gave the set character and something that he could work with the camera. And everyone else on the show kind of hated it. So after the first season, Burrows stepped back and was much less involved with the show, and other directors took over. And so the beam got put away, except that the few times that Burrows came back to shoot the show, he insisted on having it come back. So, yeah, people, eagle-eyed viewers will note that that beam seems to appear and disappear without much logical explanation.
Yeah, I'm a big one for continuity on TV shows. I always notice things when they should and shouldn't be there. And for instance, like Monica's bathroom, the one time they had the shower there and never showed a bathtub, and then the time that Chandler and Monica were in the bathtub together, it's like, where'd this bathtub come from?
That's a good point. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah, and then what's your favorite episode? Do you have a favorite episode of the show?
I'm a big fan of the one with the embryos. I think that does a really good job of demonstrating what Friends' strengths are, that it's a show that's really good about giving its characters emotional nuance and making us feel that nuance, but then also manages to include us in the fun, right? That the one with the embryos is the one with the game show where everyone competes who knows each other the best. And I think what's most appealing about that is that it feels very inclusive. You know, we as the viewers are watching this show, and we feel like we know these characters really well. And obviously we don't necessarily know the answers to these questions, you know, like how many kinds of towels does Monica have? But nonetheless, I think we still feel like the show is kind of including us in this friendship, that we get to be the sort of silent seventh member of the friend group.
My favorite episode is the one where Phoebe tries to seduce Chandler because she's found out about Monica and Chandler. That's just such
that
a great episode.
That is also fantastic.
Joey just goes and rips open the shirt, you know, with the bra, and he's like, not my first time, or whatever it is he said. It's such a great episode.
It is. It's beautifully done.
And the Brad Pitt episode for Thanksgiving was really good, too. You talk about that.
Yeah.
You talk about everything from the beginning to the end of the show. Did you ever find out? I know that they went to the 10th and final season, but was there ever talk from talking to everybody behind the scenes of trying to do more than 10 seasons, or was it just 10 seasons and that's it?
No, that was definitely it. There was a fair amount of discussion about ending it after 9 seasons.
Yeah.
It had been made relatively clear to David Crane and Marta Kaufman and Kevin Bright that, you know, once they signed the contracts for the 9th season, that there just wasn't going to be the money or the desire to bring it back again. And so when they started out on the 9th season, they began with the understanding of, okay, we're going to wrap up all of our storylines this year because this is going to be the end of the show. And then NBC realized that it didn't really have any other big shows in the offing, anything that could take Friends' place. And so they felt really strongly, okay, we really want one more year and we're willing to pay for it. And so the end got pushed back one more season. But by the time the 10th season rolled around, by the time, they agreed that it would come back, it was understood by everybody that that was definitively going to be the end.
And Warner Brothers has the money. Let's face it, the show makes billions of dollars for them every year.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Well, anything you ever wanted to know about Friends from the beginning to the end, the casting, the sets, the producing, the writing, you go in the writer's room, you go behind the scenes of the filmings, I mean, anything and everything you have discovered in this book, it's just awesome. I appreciate the time today. People can follow you at saulosterlitz.com. And at Twitter, it's Saul Austerlitz. That's your name. You got some tour dates on your website that you're going to be out doing. These are next year tour dates. Is this for Friends or is this for something else?
No, this is for this year.
Okay, you got some in September, and then you got some more coming up in December and
Yeah, it's
January.
continuing over the next few months.
Yeah, so people can catch you out on tour. It's a great book if you're a Friends fan, the definitive book. Hey, I appreciate the time today. Are you working any other TV? I noticed you did some other books, The History of Sitcom, 24 episodes. You looked at American film comedy sitcom. You did From the Beatles to the White Stripe music video, A History of Music Videos. What's your next project? Have you thought of anything yet?
Yeah, I don't have the next project lined up right now. I do have an article about Friends and the possibility or unlikelihood of its ever coming back to TV that's going to run in the New York Times on Sunday.
Oh, it better not. You mean rebooting it like all these other shows that people are doing?
Exactly.
If they're going to do it, they need to do a reunion show. And I don't know that that's ever going to happen, especially with Schwimmer. But I guess we'll find out. So I'll look forward to seeing your article. The book, again, Generation Friends, comes out September 17th. Saul, thank you very much for the time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.